Hey, this is the Power Team for our first podcast. I'm Elena.
And I'm Onisha.
I'm Nia.
And I'm Alexis McCormick.
And we're here to talk about how to lie with statistics.
Okay, before we say anything else, I just want to say I don't like the language he uses, the author. There's a lot of unnecessary words, and at some point he's like, he uses the word chicanery or something to mean like, deviousness, I think. I'm not really sure. But I was like, I don't know what this means. And I just think that he could explain things a lot more concisely, and that will get the point across just as well without having to slog through, like, two pages to maybe explain one concept.
Well, I think because you feel this way because he's very sarcastic in a lot of the pages and sections. It's kind of, on page 9, he says this book is sort of a primer in a way to use statistics to deceive. So this entire book is just saying how statistic is used to have people believing something that's not necessarily true in all ways.
I actually really like the humor involved, but like some of the things, he uses synonyms to describe one thing, and it's just like, pick one. Like, for example, page 8, now that I turn to page 9. The secret language of statistics, so appealing in fact-minded culture, is employed to sensationalize, inflate, confuse, and oversimplify. Yada, 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 yada. And then so on and so forth. The same general tone continues for the entire thing.
I mean, in a way, he's doing this because people who already know how to lie, they already know the basics of this, or like exactly how to. And he's trying to just teach people who are honest in order to like self-defend themselves, because that's what he said on page 9 as well. Honest men must learn them in self-defense, so that you can learn the ways of like an unhonest person.
It's like burglary.
Yeah.
So do you guys believe that there's any non-lying, if that's a word, in statistics? Is there any truth in statistics?
Well, the thing about this whole book is that it's always true. When you're giving like the different averages the graphs, it's always a true thing. They make it look different. It looks like a different way.
It's just like
it's different ways to perceive the information and the way like people want you to perceive the information, so that they can get you what you like. You can do what they want you to do or what they don't want you to do.
Right, like the outcome they want. Like the heights of the dudes.
Yeah.
Not the heights. Like the prices of the houses.
Yeah.
Of the different averages, like the mean versus the mode versus the median.
Yeah.
Like those are very different numbers depending on who they want to sell the house to.
Exactly what you
look at. They're all algebraically correct.
Yeah. It's just like the way the prompt is organized, because like the way that someone studies something, the result of it might be true, but it's all like you said, it's depending on like if you look at averages, mean, median, or mode, each of it is correct. It's just the certain thing that you look at.
Right.
So I keep on saying that when they're doing a statistics-based poll, like they use one location. So one of the examples where they went to a train station or the bus station, and they said, "Oh, well, you can find a whole bunch of people in this train." Like, I don't personally think that's true. Like,
right? Could I like interject?
Because they did.
They even gave the example of like you won't find pregnant women or like young children or very old, because they don't use the trains; they're stuck at home.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's not a complete subsection.
It's also, do you guys remember the one about where he went to like different houses and I forgot exactly what survey that was, but he went to different houses, I think to ask about, like, what kind of magazines they read, and he said that it all depends on, like, what time you ask them, what neighborhood you go to, what kind of stuff they're actually willing to show you, because they might not show you everything they have, so you don't know, you're not getting an honest opinion from the people, and it's also kind of, like, I forgot which one it was, I think it was, like, the one from, with salaries from college students or like
from
alumni.
Yeah.
Where depending on like how much money they make, because not everyone did the survey or like provided information, honest feedback So you wouldn't know exactly, like, as a whole, what the average is, because only a certain group of people gave you that stuff. So you, if you have 10 people, you only have the results of 10 people instead of a whole university.
Yeah. There's always, like, a bias or something, like, that skews the data in a way that the results that you get may not be telling the truth, and you just have to deal with it because that's all you've been given by the people you're surveying.
So let's talk about the picture on page 10. Why do you think the author included this?
Good question.
Well, thinking
can we all agree that looks like a face?
Or does it look like smoking a cigarette.
Great.
I mean, looking off of it, it's kind of like as proportion-wise or a curved line going upwards, but...
Oh, yeah.
Like the big black thick line
that's
going upwards.
So I see this as a general population of statistic-based people who can get away with things, and now they're snarking about it and laying back and seeing what the result came out of that. People believe their statistic results, and now, like, I don't know.
That's a good analysis.
Yeah.
I think it all boils down to they want to make money.
Right.
Yeah.
Because by making, like, the ad look really good or their data look really good or et cetera, people are drawn to that, and then they'll invest in the business or they'll buy the product or they'll be like, oh, wow, Yale alumni make so much money. Let's go to Yale.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's the way that, like, companies or advertisements or whatever, they present their results.
Mm-hmm.
Because they could, if they want it to be good, they will give the highest average or highest result of whatever their data is. And if they want it to be a product that people say, like, prevents acne or whatever, they will, like, the lowest amount of average. It's the way that the data is presented.
I really like the example he brings up with the IQ scores and how there's only, like,
there's, like, a margin of error.
Yeah, like, just a little bit of difference, and how that can contain if you're intelligent or not, just from 93 to a 104.
Right. I thought it was really interesting that he also brought up, like, social implications of things like that.
Right.
Where when people get so hung up on the number instead of, like, the bracket, or even they get hung up on the bracket, it's like, we're damaging ourselves by this.
Right.
What do you guys think he means by on page 23 when he says how to read it without learning too much that is not necessary? So,
page 23.
Mm-hmm. How to read it under the book. How to read it without learning too much that is not necessarily so.
I think that's... We can kind of go back to the IQ thing as an example, almost, where you're given some number, and, like, your kid, let's go with, like, a 101. I think that was actually the number used.
Yeah.
And that can, you automatically think, oh, above average, because average is 100, like, by the book. That's the mean. But then you start thinking, oh, like, my kid's better than that kid, or they're not as good as this, yada, yada, yada. And it's all this extra stuff that's not quite, that's not quite what the score tells you. It's just a bracket, where they are in the bracket.
Yep.
And then female volume, what was that?
What is it?
That was also in the passage with the quote you gave.
Female volume?
Yeah.
That's from the same chapter?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on 22, I think. Last line. So
oh, female volume.
They're saying it's an issue of sampling and who you ask and what they're saying.
Yeah.
So, in that case, that changes my answer a little bit. Whoops.
Yay.
So, necessarily, you don't have to understand everything that is pointed out to you. You just need to know the gist of everything. And that's, I think that's what you're... The quote you said about without learning too much, it's not so necessary. That's what I think it is that you don't have to know which every little detail that's involved with the actual scenario. You just need to have the bigger picture and know what's right from wrong and what's the positive and what's the negative effect.
I'm going to add on to that and say that you also need to know who the subjects are, like that they're asking. This goes back to, like, bias and things. If you're only asking, like, people aged 30 to 40 and it's a political poll, you're missing out all of the 20-year-olds.
Right.
And that can, like, really change things. So you shouldn't always take what you're seeing at face value, even though it may be a professionally done study.
This makes me kind of, like, scared to believe any other statistics that I see now.
Yes.
Now I'm so, like, iffy and, like, is this true? Like,
Because
they bring up, like, the curing cancer and, like, people who lived in, what was it, Missouri or Minnesota or one of them. Like, I don't know. It's just, like, now I'm, like, iffy about everything.
Yeah, there was a poll in, like, chapter 3 that only used, like, 12 people. But it was, like, out of 12 people, of course, you probably get the answer that you want. Because the bigger the numbers, like, the bigger amount of people that you use, the more spread out your data is going to be. And, like, the more, like with the penny test that he used, he got eight heads out of 10 flips. And even though we know that you're supposed to expect 50-50, it was 80-20. And that's basically how they did it with surveying people. They only use 12 people to present their statistics, but they won't tell you that. They probably think, in advertising, they probably think they have maybe like 100 or 1,000 people surveyed, and they just use this to produce the results that they think they want to see and that they want the consumers to see.
Right. Like, I think it's wrong that they're only testing a dozen people, and it's probably going towards, like, 20 dozen of people. Like, one dozen of people, it doesn't affect everybody else, but the way they're putting it out is making it seem, though, that what they want their viewers to see is positive, when at the long run it's probably negative with more, like,
or no change, like the toothpaste.
Right.
I think that was actually the one with, like, 12 or, like, 20 people that they used to ask, like, did this toothpaste help you? Well, they all have the same ingredients, basically.
Right.
It's different color, different brand name.
Right.
Like, in the end, it probably won't affect anything, but the specific people I asked, they probably done something for them.
Like, when you also do the experiments and stuff, you have to consider the probable errors and, like, the standard errors. The errors of, like, when we were looking at all the experiments, like, specifically looking at certain data, instead of, like, the errors of people not being there, or, like, the amount of people that you survey, age range, and, like, different, like, generation of, like, people that you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Did you want to bring up something, Elena? American Dream?
Hey, I already tried the whole money business. But, yeah, okay.
How do you feel like American Dream fits into this book?
Well,
they're all
aiming to get money,
mm-hmm.
and they all think that if they do this, they will sell more. Basically,
right.
With all these ads, they're aiming to sell more. If they are profiting from this, is that acceptable as a way to reach the American Dream?
I don't think it's acceptable, but no one's going to stop them because no one's telling them that they're doing wrong.
It's not illegal.
Yeah,
right.
It's just deceptive.
And everyone's doing it. So if it's not like we just stop one person, it's gone forever. Like, every company's probably doing this.
Should the government regulate it? Be, like, requiring the number of, like, test subjects they use or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the right word. Or, like, examples of, like, the people they talked to and who the interviewers were and, like, really who was doing the experiments and stuff.
And
that kind,
like,
of transparency.
And not being able to say average instead of, like, using more specific
numbers. Yeah, which
numbers.
Average?
Yeah.
Like,
what number are you actually looking at?
There was one part where they were saying that advertisers used median and then average. And their advertisements is like,
I think that's
on page 36.
On the second chapter, maybe.
Yeah, and the chapter, end of the second chapter, it was like, of new subscribers, it said their median age is 34 years and their average family income is $7,020 a year. And that's basically like they're using a very specific choice of words in order to report their data collection. And some people probably just will be like, oh, okay, median and average, sure, whatever. But like they say average and we don't know whether or not they mean mean.
Yeah, they
like
say
median
average
or mode.
Yeah.
And but sometimes that would go over people's heads and it can be, like I said before, pretty deceptive and we just don't know.
I mean, mathematically, they are right because of, like, the data that they're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
But because they're looking at certain amount of numbers, we don't really know what that number represents until they actually tell you.
Mm. So, our next reading will be
good.
What's our reading? 3 to 5? 3 to...
Four to eight.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well,
cool.
Say bye, Mr. Miles.
Hi, Mr. Miles. Give us an A.
Hi, guys. For today's discussion, we'll be talking about How to Lie with Statistics, chapters 4, 5, 6, and 7. This is Elena, Alexis, Monisha, and Nia.
Okay, so we were asked to do a couple things by Mr. Miles. Hi, Mr. Miles. One of those was picking a quote from the front page and relating it to the introduction. And one that we all really agreed on, well, one of them, is the third quote, "It ain't so much the things we don't know that get us in trouble, it's the things we know ain't so." Manisha, would you like to start us off?
I agree with that quote, and I think it relates to our introduction or this whole book in general, because in a way statistics is knowing what's behind the numbers and analyzing that in depth, whereas someone who doesn't know the information already, or like someone that knows less of the information, aren't aware of things that would get them in trouble.
I would also like to expand on this a bit and say that even worse than lack of information is misinformation,
right,
where you believe something is true or it's incomplete, but you still think that is how it is, and you're going throughout life with that assumption in your mind. That can be really, really damaging.
On page 8, I feel like the quote relates to something that I highlighted on page 8 that said, "The secret language of statistics, so appealing in a fact-minded culture, is employed to sensationalize, inflate, confuse, and oversimplify," which is kind of like things that we don't know that get us in trouble and things that we do know. Things that we do know is just things that were like sensationalized, inflated, confused, and oversimplified. And I think that's what trips up people a lot when everyone is lying with statistics. It's like what? It's like the information that you're given is skewed so that it's communicating something that's not actually meaning what it's trying to tell you, like what it actually, like the information behind it.
I'd like to go to the last paragraph on page 9. This book is sort of a primer in a way to use statistics to deceive. And basically I believe that this sentence in the introduction relates a lot to the quote that we picked, because it basically says everything is a lie, and normally people get in trouble for lying. So this book gives a more of a detail of how this is actually true.
Right. Really quick, I would also like to rope in another quote, which I think is very important to this concept. The second one by H.G. Wells. "Statistical thinking will one day be as necessary for efficient citizenship as the ability to read and write." What we're saying about lying with statistics and how statistics is everywhere but it's full of misinformation and it's misleading on purpose, this quote really comes in and says, like, we have to do better. We have to learn how to, like, think through it. And we're not at that point yet.
So
I agree with you.
So,
do you guys want to elaborate that on a little bit more? Because I think I'm a bit iffy about that.
Okay. So
I don't fully understand that one or how it compares to statistics in general.
Okay, so the second quote, right?
Yeah.
How it needs to be as, like,
prevalent. No, I mean,
as reading,
I understand
writing.
That's necessary and all that. I just want you to elaborate a little bit more on that.
Right. So, for example, with the graphs, we all brought up graphs to talk about, and they are intentionally misleading or unintentionally, but
right,
either way, someone who just glances at it or doesn't give it a lot
not
of deep
thought
they're going to come with an impression that is untrue. And that is going to, in some way, indirectly affect everything else they do, especially if it deals with social issues or medicine or how they invest their money, etc. It can really mess up a person's life if it gets too far down the rabbit hole. What H.G. Wells is saying is that we need to think statistically and, like, really know the ins and outs of how to, like, kind of watch out for ourselves. And just like how some people will write a slanderous piece or, like, yellow journalism where you know it's not true. It's obviously very biased. Well, statistics is the same way. It's very biased, but some people don't realize that. And that's where it needs to come in and be like, you should teach this more.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. Okay, I kind of think that the quote means that the people who actually analyze the statistical variables in any situation tend to look over something that they believe is more important rather than a whole group would believe that's important. So if you look at the first paragraph on page 7, it talks about how the author's father-in-law was doing it kind of like a newspaper article, and it talks about like the crime rate versus the no crime rate. And they say it is one that overlooks no crime in its own area that has been known to give more attention to an murder, blah, blah, blah. So they want to show more serious things rather than what actually could be positive in cases.
Mm-hmm. So in a way, you're kind of saying that they're picking certain things to present to the viewers instead of, like,
right,
presenting what's actually positive or true.
Yeah, the entire both variables. So in this case, it'd be crime versus no crime.
Right.
They want to grab the reader's attention by pulling something that's so serious. So we were asked to put the second paragraph on page 18 into our own words. So everyone, go to page 18. Who'd like to read the second paragraph?
I'll do that. It says, a river cannot, we are told, rise above its source. Well, it can seem to if there is a pumping station concealed somewhere about. It is equally true that the result of a sampling study is no better than the sample it is based on. By the time the data have been filtered through layers of statistical manipulation and reduced to a decimal pointed average, the result begins to take on an aura of conviction that a closer look at the sampling would deny.
Alright, I really, really like this paragraph. I thought it was a good choice for us. So the whole example of the river and the pumping source and stuff like that, I think the really big point is saying you can never have a conclusion that is more accurate or more telling than its sources.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a bunch of data points and it's just data, well, what you draw from that cannot mean more than the data itself. So if you have bad data, you're of course going to have an even worse conclusion.
Mm-hmm. Never really thought about it that way. I was just kind of thinking, like, it was just saying that I don't know, what we see is kind of like what we get, but we don't really, like, sometimes we try to, like, make more of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not always that case. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I don't know. I'm not saying it that well, but, like, it says the river cannot rise above its source unless there's, like, a hidden pumping station or something. And I feel like humans can kind of be the pumping station that kind of, like, feed like, bigger or, like, more exaggerated results than original data is.
Right, like a bias or, like, a hidden agenda.
Exactly.
I kind of agree with, I really agree with Naya, because I think that we're the problem and that we're the reason why people do lie with statistics, because we continue to let it happen, even if there's so many sources telling us that it is not true. So basically I'm saying, since everything is a lie, it gets to the point where people know it's wrong, but they're still going to listen to what is being said.
In a way, I kind of agree with all of you guys, because I do think that if you think about, like, when companies present information to, like, a consumer or something, they're trying to do it so that their consumer buys their product, or so that they're showing the positives instead of not showing the company's misfalls or things that are negative. Kind of like something that Enron was doing with their investments, I believe, or their
mm-hmm.
assets. Like, they were hiding their assets so that you can see what was good. And one of those things is kind of like, are they doing it because they're looking at consumers, and are the consumers the one who are feeding into that problem? I mean, not feeding into, but are the cause of that action.
Right, because everyone wants to see good numbers.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And as consumers, you go toward things that are good. You don't want the negatives, or you don't want something that is bad for you, or
mm-hmm.
in general.
So we were also asked to respond about what is the advantage of stratifying random samples, and what difficulties does it propose according to this chapter?
Okay, so let's just make sure we all know what a stratified random sample is. It's when you can't take a true random sample, so you kind of estimate percentage of groups. So let's say in Philadelphia, we have, just pulling these numbers out of the air, let's say 25% are adults between ages 30 and 60. And then some percentage are teens, some percentage are like senior citizens, etc. So from that, you go in and try to get the same ratio of participants. So if you have like 15 or so in that middle range, you need a corresponding ratio of teens and of senior citizens.
Mm-hmm.
The issue with this is that sometimes there's overlap, and sometimes the actual proportion that they're getting is inaccurate. Which can lead to all sorts of other biases as well.
So, I mean, this is basically the whole book. And the whole book, not in this chapter specifically, but in the whole book it talks about how, for example, the train station, where they think a train station is good enough to pull statistical data from, but in reality it's not, because certain people might not be at that stop at a certain time, which could conclude a very different result from what they actually occur.
Right, like pregnant women and
right.
people with kids and the very old and the sick, etc. Like, their opinions
yeah.
still matter, and it's not being accounted for. However, the plus side is that it's really cheap. It's much cheaper than doing a real random study, and it's a lot cheaper than having people going knocking on doors, as well as being the train stations.
But
so,
it doesn't give you like
right,
accurate
but,
information.
But
so
what this means is that there's tons and tons of this bad data floating around because it's cheap to do. But it can also look nice depending on how you skew it. If you know you're asking a certain type of people, you can kind of make it look however you want.
So in a way of kind of like deceiving it.
Yep.
And to think like
that's wrong.
Yeah, and to think like we're greedy. Everyone's greedy, so they're going to try to save their money, and they don't care what the I mean they care what the result is, but they don't care how people take it.
Right.
They got their point out. Some people are gonna like understand them and listen to them and buy their product or listen to their data. But like in reality, they just want to get their point out. And
mm-hmm.
that's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So now we were asked to respond to what does the author mean on page 45 when he says hardly nobody is exactly normal in any way. So, Nia, would you like to start us off?
Yeah, I think what he means by that is that there's average, like the example on the facing page, page 44, it was talking about Giselle's norms and how by certain ages children should be able to be doing something, quote-unquote doing something, and there's like quote-unquote average kids doing blank by age blank, and it produces a wave of parents' emotions and or like evaluations of their kids thinking that they're less or more than they really are. But it's actually like there's a huger bracket of ability across like children. I think that's why like normal is more of a range than it is like a set number. That's what I think the author is trying to get at.
Normal, I think, depends on what context you put it in. Normal, like in the study of the babies, it's normal for someone to, I forgot what age they said. What age was it?
Let's
okay. whatever the age was, but, like, in certain time, that that's the normal time when a baby starts walking or talking and stuff. But in, like, different contexts, it could be possibly normal to have, like, 50 heads out of however many trials, but it all depends on, like, its context.
So basically this entire article are different examples that show misleading graphs from different resources. So some are from Fox and some are from...
It's more from, like, baseball games.
Baseball games. So it's just crazy how, like, they do this in everyday aspect.
Yeah. It has a lot to do with, like, data visualization. A few of the methods that I saw were, like, changing the y-axis to make the differences seem more exaggerated. Like, for example, like, the bars could be between, like, 3 and 4, but, like, 3 could be the bottom of the graph and 4 could be the top, even though the changes are only, like, in decimals,
yeah.
Things like that. And there's also, like, cumulative growth versus non-cumulative. So that means, like, they add on how much of the earnings that some company has made, and instead of, like, saying what they've made, like, each year, and the number that they were adding up was going, it was an upward trend, but the non-cumulative one was, like, they're making less and less money each year. And then just, like, not adhering to the rules and making graphics not look like they're supposed to. And then also another one, flip the y-axis upside down, which is just, like, it's just all a trick of the eye for the most part.
Right. I would love to really quickly tie this into chapter 6, page 69, where they're talking about data visualization in a lot of detail. My favorite graph that they decided to show was the one with the money bags and how if someone's making twice as much as someone else, like an accurate representation would be holding two equal size money bags.
Right.
However, the way a lot of agencies like to do this in his example is to have some guy with a small bag and some guy with a, like, massive bag, almost the size of a house. And it looks like 4, maybe 5 times as big as the other person's, even though the data only says it's twice as much money.
Mm-hmm. I think that's also kind of, like, in the previous pages, when you look at 62 and 63, there's, like, a graph of a guy, like, the top of a person's head, and it goes from 18 to 24, whereas if you look on page 63, it goes from 20 to 22. You see that, like, huge change and curve because of just, like, the range of the numbers. Whereas, like, if you have numbers that are closer, so, like, if it went from 20 to, let's say, 30, you would see a really small change, whereas it went from 20 to 22, you see that whole curve transition.
Okay, so let's talk about the articles that we actually found.
Right.
So,
do you want to start?
Sure. So I found an article, and it's from Fox, and they news aired a serious Obamacare misleading graph, and it says Obamacare enrollment, and if everyone looks, it is... Obviously, okay, it goes from 6 million to 7 million, but because of the axis and because of the gaps between the actual numbers, the 6 million to the 7 million seems very largely, like, very wide spaced out. But they actually did their own graph with the actual numbers and more representation. Yeah. There you go, thanks. And there's a less of a gap than there is when... the graph they provided.
So the one that I looked at is from when Apple does presentations with their new products. This one shows the sales of cumulative Apple sales, or like iPhone sales. And the first thing that really flipped me off is that they have no y-axis.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you exactly know that how much are they making? It could be from 0 to 1. And they could show that whole transition, but you don't really know how much is the actual number or what is the actual y-axis. They have the x-axis, which is the years, but on the graph, you don't have a y-axis, so that's just misleading information for your consumers.
Also, just to go off of this, and what in the article that Mr. Miles gave us to look at, is that with cumulative, you're adding up from all the previous years, so it's all combined. So if you look at 2013 versus 2008, that from 2013, it's all the previous years added on.
Right.
Right. Okay, so for mine, I looked at Facebook and how people like to click on articles pertaining to political views and how Facebook themselves will weed out the very extreme views and how people click on the articles depending whether they pop up at random or whether or not like Facebook filters them and all this other stuff. So the graph itself looks like a line graph. This is not the best representational media for this data. It should really be more like a bar graph or something. Because with the line graph, it looks like there's a downward trend where really it is categorical.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then also there was an article that pointed out how the Treasury documents from somewhere in the UK was displaying the infrastructure plans, and in one of them, the documents that they actually used had a y-axis going from 1 to 10 to 100 to 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, and a million.
Ooh, that's a hot
like, they're all separated, like, equally, and that makes the bar graph look a little bit more even across the board, but in reality, what it's supposed to look like is, like, there's a few categories that are very high and the others are very low, which is them just trying to make it look like everything's pretty even with infrastructure when it's really not. And that's about all the time we have right now. And
thanks
the next
for listening.
Hey everyone, we're back for our third and final podcast on how to lie with statistics. We're going to be discussing chapters 8, 9, and 10.
All right, to start us off, I would really love to talk about the intro to chapter 8. And the author brings up smoking and grades. And it seems like smoking causes bad grades. That is the conclusion that whatever the study came away with. And he starts to go in and say, well, maybe not. Maybe it's the bad grades that cause smoking. Maybe people with bad grades are more sociable, and then they smoke socially. Or maybe there's some other cause altogether. So I think that's really cool. And definitely something to look more at. And he gives a bunch of other examples. So what do you guys think about correlation versus causation?
I think that there's a fine line between the two. And a lot of people don't recognize that just because things like increase or decrease at the same rate as another thing increases or decreases means that there's like a direct causation. It's just an observation that you can make and you think maybe they're related, but they're probably not in all cases.
I definitely agree with the fact that there's always like more than one lurking element where you can't just look at like one thing as being the main cause of the effect at the end, that there's more side effects.
I'd like to say that I think it's pretty interesting that we can look at an analyzation in more than one way, so we can say that one thing causes the other or the other causes the certain thing. But I think because of the way we think, is there's no actual answer as to what causes what, because we think differently from everybody else, so we observe what we want to think.
I would just like to really briefly bring up chi-square, it's not T, it's math, and how much can that actually be used here? Since it's the goal of chi-square is to actually examine whether or not there is an underlying variable that's influencing it. But with a lot of these situations, it can be very complicated, or really, I just want to know the math aspect of this. How much can it be applied? Especially what we're learning in class. Anyone have ideas? This is really for Mr. Miles. Mr. Miles, do bring this up in class. That'll be great.
I don't know, chi-square is obviously important, but because we all think differently and we hear different, we hear the same thing, but we think it in different ways, it's that we really don't know what variable is causing the other. It's just the way it's shown.
Yeah, and I think chi-squared, is more for, comparisons between things that are more than just, one, two variables. Mm-hmm. Explanation of two variables, which is like correlation for two variables instead of just one.
So I think that's how we can relate chi-squared back to correlation.
Well, then hold on, really quick. What about the degrees of freedom? I feel like with that, we're leading up to chi-square statistics in reference to the different degrees of freedom all the way up to, I think he gave us, like, 8 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, this is a bit of a tangent. Let's move on. Okay. also I think it's interesting is that certain variables are both the cause and effect of each other.
Mm-hmm.
The example the book gave was amount of stock and income. The more income you have, the more stock you can buy, and the more stock you have, the more income you have, because it's making
mm-hmm.
you money. So I thought that was very interesting.
I'd like to point out on page 91, it says another thing to watch out for is the conclusion in which correlation has been inferred to continue beyond the data, blah, yada, yada.
Which legit word.
Yeah.
It has been demonstrated.
Yeah. So I think that's very important, and he brought it out for a specific reason. Anybody have any ways to think that's important?
I think I can actually relate this back to the quotes in the inside cover. Oh, not the quote, but the passage we were told to read for last podcast, where it's with the river and the pump,
mm-hmm.
and how the river can't rise above its source.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a continuation of that,
right?
Where you should not draw these huge conclusions from data that may be faulty.
Mm-hmm.
And also, just to relate that further, there's a part on page 94 that talks about how some article drew data from Cornell but made their own conclusion, but made it sound like Cornell made the same conclusion using that data, which also could be false.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's so shady, because when people see Cornell, they're like, oh, that sounds professional.
Yeah.
Like, big science institution, yada, yada, yada. But then the conclusion is all the journalists, and it's a false one. There's a lot of issues with that.
This brings back to, like, economics class when we're talking about the economic bubble, like, because there's a brand name or a good name, like,
mm-hmm.
things have to be shown different ways and ways of better, like,
yeah, that appeal
they show
to
that
people
that, yeah, so that's more appealing and stuff, just giving them the actual truth sometimes. And that goes with, like, a lot of the graphs that we see, because they try to make it presentable so that we're only seeing the good parts, and it doesn't matter what the range is, as long as it's, like, from a small difference to a big difference, that's a difference for the company, and in a way, that's a good thing for them.
Mm-hmm.
Right, there's an example I really, really like on page 97 that kind of relates to this, and how key information can be ignored, and it's about how turned out a woman's foot is,
mm-hmm.
the older she gets, and the more she walks. So, obviously, the data makes it seem like the older you get, the more turned out your feet become. But what they're ignoring was that, back in the day, it was fashionable and, like, very womanly to walk a certain way, and that's with your feet turned out.
Mm-hmm.
So, with the younger generation, they're not going to do that. And the data doesn't say that at all, and they made all these conclusions, like, the older you get, you walked a certain way for whatever reason. And that can be, that's, like, a super different conclusion than, oh, well, they just walk differently back in the day. That's the fashionable thing.
Mm-hmm. I think these examples are ridiculous. Like,
I
feel like they just pull out, like, any example. Because, like, I'd never thought, like, the older you, like, I mean, obviously sometimes it gets different. But, like, how turned out your foot is, like, from when you're younger to you're older, like, where did they come up with that? Like,
yeah, who knows? Like, why do these studies exist? Why
right.
do they matter? Who cares?
Sometimes I feel like some of these studies exist just so you can prove the statistics wrong or something like that.
Oh, that's the fun part.
Can we go to chapter 9?
Yes.
Okay, so on chapter 9, there's, like, the first sentence. I actually really liked it. I thought it summed up a lot of the things that this whole book is talking about, which is that misinforming people by the use of statistical material might be called statistical manipulation. In a word, through not a very good one, statisticalization.
Statisticalization.
Right? Yeah.
That sounds terrible. Sounds like disease.
I thought it just connects with the whole book in general. That it sums up everything that we've been talking about, and that everything that the author is talking about.
Yeah, because the whole thing's about manipulating the data,
mm-hmm.
and how, either how to spot it or how to even really do it. Because the stuff with the graphs, that's really cool. If I was going to become, like, an a journalist or something, or like an ad man, using all those techniques. Sell the products.
I mean, in a way, by reading this book, we kind of know that now, which is kind of the main goal of this book, to teach us how to lie with statistics, obviously, that's in its name.
So there's some stuff with the census and incomes. And they're saying that the census said the income of an average family is like around 3,000. But some like philanthropic foundation is like, it's 5,000. Yay. And then the way they did this was that they took total income and then divided it by the total amount of people. And however big the household size was, then they gave that amount to each person. So if you had 2 adults and 2 kids, you get 4, like, people's worth of money.
Okay.
But really, that's not true. Kids don't make money. They're
right.
Just, they're there. They suck up money.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was interesting, and I'm wondering, like, why that information wouldn't have been included, because I think this is real. This actually happened.
Yeah.
And why they would do that, because, yeah, it was good for the philanthropic thing, but really, how... It's so blatant that like, it doesn't make sense why they would, or who would okay that.
Who would okay anything? Like, this entire book is, like, it's crazy how much they lie, but they just do it to make themselves look good and to make, like, to prove a point that might not even be, positively proven. Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, because at the end of the day, you want to get something out of it. So that's what they want to do. They don't want to lose anything, or
they want to
have like the least amount of loss. So
mm-hmm.
Let's all look at the bottom of 103, the little sentence right there, to show we aren't cheating.
Which is that?
103, with the graph, yeah.
Right. When they did the incomes with
yeah.
the map of the U.S.,
yeah.
and they're like, look how much money the government's blah, 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 blah. And they did it based on states and the state income.
Yep.
So when they took all these western and middle states, which has a small population, a lot of farmers who don't necessarily make a ton,
right.
where the cost of living is also lower, then it looks like a lot of area. It looks like a very significant figure. But when you take it from the East Coast, so with high income, high cost of living areas like New York, then it's suddenly a much smaller area and a lot less impactful.
Mm. That's just wrong.
I just thought it was funny.
Yeah, it was really cool. We're not cheating. Look, we did it the other way.
Okay.
Oh, and then also with corrupt data and corrupted data, when you ask people to provide information about themselves, they will almost always lie.
Right.
Like
yeah.
if you're talking about how many times you bathe or how much sleep you get or what magazines you read, people are going to be like, oh, how can I make this sound a little better? Even if it's anonymous, there's still that perception that, oh, I'm giving away information about myself.
Right.
So anything that can get a little bit iffy.
Yeah, there's it's really impossible to avoid any kind of errors on either, like, the researcher's part or the, like, the specimen to,
right.
you know,
mm-hmm.
quote-unquote specimens part or whoever's being observed. It's hard not to find some kind of error in it that could have, skewed the data in some way or another.
I think also looking at, like, your range of data or, like, how many people you collect your data from is also important because on page 109, it was one of the quotes said, any percentage figure based on a small number of cases is likely to be misleading. So you have to look at, like, the number of people that you observed.
I like the image on page 110 and 111. I think it really set a good graphic for showing how the percentages can change based on the base of where it started, because it says, oh yeah, there was a 50% pay cut, so now the pay is $50. And then when they say the pay cut was restored, well, yeah, so you're getting 50% of what you made before, but that's not the original amount, which was 100. You're only getting 75 now. And I thought that was an interesting way to illustrate how that data changes, even though the percent is the same.
Right. He gave a lot of examples of percentages and, like, prices and stuff, where it's, like, I can't remember the actual numbers, but it's, like, 60 and then 40 or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can't add these percentages together. You take 60% of the original and then 40% of that next number. It's not 60 and 40 together.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really interesting. And there's a lot of this with, like, housing and prices, and I think he gives, like, car prices as an example with interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
With, like, monthly payments, you can't add those percentages together, and it ends up being more money than you expected it to be.
Guys, want to move on to chapter 10?
Yeah.
Again, he adds a lot of, like, I don't know. He's, like, so goofy to me because, like, he's just, like, again, like, I should not be addressing you like you're a pirate. Like I don't know.
I didn't get that. Pirate cutlasses? In what way?
You've been
talking at us for 10 chapters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, this whole chapter is
a lot of, like, important questions that we should be asking.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a rundown of when you see a statistic
yeah.
in a newspaper, what should you ask yourself to make sure it's okay?
Yeah.
So that's, like, who says so, and, like, how do they know, and what's missing from this data?
Do you want to change
the subject? And
I think the most important question that someone should ask when looking at the data is whether or not it's realistic.
Does it make sense?
Yeah. Which is a lot on page 137, which is, does it make sense? I think that question makes... Because once you ask that question, you can fill it up with background questions of where does this number come from, how does this get here, and, like, all that. But asking that question, does it make sense, is a very important thing.
Yeah,
me too. I agree.
I'd like to go to 127, like, what's missing? Like, when I'm always looking at something statistical or not, like, I want to know what's missing, like, what did they hide behind truth and or hide behind the lies, and then, like, I don't know, I just always thought about that. It just might be me, but
mm-hmm.
I always wanted to know, like, is everything that they present to me true
right.
or not?
And sometimes they're not even hiding it on purpose. Sometimes they just don't even know that it's missing, but it is.
Right.
And that's even more frustrating.
Asking whether or not there's bias also really goes along
mm-hmm.
with that. Like,
mm-hmm.
what is their agenda? Whose side are they on? What is their goal?
Right.
Yeah.
And, like, what are they trying to communicate with these statistics?
Mm-hmm.
Can there be data that isn't biased? Or what are some examples of that?
I think for it to be completely unbiased,
yeah.
you have to ask every single person, and it also had to be something where the people are not the ones giving the information.
Mm-hmm.
So every single person, and it's not something like, oh, how much do you sleep, unless you're actually monitoring
mm-hmm.
each
yeah.
night how much they sleep.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
I think that would be good data.
Because
otherwise,
be like,
it's too subjective.
Yeah, it'd have to be some like kind of like computerized way of collecting the data. Because, like, if you just ask someone, like, face-to-face, they might, like, look at you, might not want to give you the right answer, or they feel a little bit self-conscious, might, you know, you never
yeah.
know. So anything that's, like, more, like, that has to do with, like, computer collection of data, I think would be less biased, unless the computer's, like, broken too, which means we'll never get anything without a bias then.
Doesn't that sound like a lot of work?
Well,
yeah.
That's why we don't do it.
Happen.
Yeah.
yeah.
That's like,
one of the reasons why.
I mean, like, the census tries because they have to get everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
even then, there's issues. People try to get around it for, like, whatever reasons, or
yeah.
someone's sick and they don't fill it out.
Yeah. There's also, like, homeless people and stuff.
Right.
Right.
That can't even, like, get access to complete the census.
Mm-hmm.
Should we round it off?
Yep. To sum it up, this book, I was very surprised. I'm really happy this book presented this information the way it did. In the beginning, I did not like the writing, but it grew on me. I thought it was really fun towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
And it does present very good information. I feel like it's accurate and that they're not misleading us themselves, and that this math part of it's really solid.
Mm-hmm.
Also, this book is on Bill Gates' beach reading list, just so you all know. It's really great.
I don't know, like, I kind of, like, I'm scared to, like, ever look at something that has
data
this,
again.
Yeah.
Right.
Because, like, I don't know, like, now that I read this, like, now I don't know, like, who's lying and what's the truth and who's behind this. And, like, there's, I'm just going to keep on asking questions and there's never going to be, like, a real answer.
I feel like that happens with everything, though. Like, once you
yeah.
study it, like, I can't look at films anymore the same
oh,
way.
Oh, true.
Well,
yeah,
honestly,
I mean,
in about a week, I'll probably stop caring.
I mean, yeah, but you're still going to think about it in a way.
Yeah.
Like, once you know something, you know it, and
yeah.
it doesn't go away.
I definitely am going to think about things differently now. And I also think the book as a whole was kind of, like,
yeah.
lots and lots and lots of examples of things. And it was a little, like, it got a little boring towards the end, because especially it was, like, summarizing what happened in the previous chapters and bringing it all together and stuff. And I think that was really neat. I just don't like the way it ended, because it seemed kind of, like,
off.
There was something missing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was just like, okay, I'm done asking these questions, and that's the book. It's all gone now. I'm just like, oh, okay.
Bye.
Like, I didn't think it would end that way. I feel like chapter 9 does a better job at pulling all the previous chapters together than chapter 10 does.
Yeah.
And I think they should have been switched, but that's just me.
I agree.
Is that all?
Yep.
All right.
Thanks
so, I mean,
for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Peace out.